and welcome to this week's Daily Info Oxcast. It's your weekly guide to all the best events happening in and around Oxford.
And there is always a big array of different kinds of events. This week I'm going to be talking about stuff to do with World War I, World War II and 16th century English literature.
Not World War III.
Not yet.
I thought you were leading that way. I'm going to be talking about existentialism, rats and jousting.
But to start us off, food for thought at the St. Giles Cafe tonight at 7:30. This is where the 16th century English literature part comes in. There's going to be a five-course meal followed by a literary discussion with guest speaker Lynn Robson, who is a specialist in 16th and 17th century English literature.
And are they eating 16th century... I really hope inspired food, like the show that Sue Perkins and Giles Corran used to do, where they'd eat
really hope foods. St. Giles Cafe has actually taken over just over a year ago, and they're doing amazing food at the moment. Just look at their website, they've got a blog, and just the most delicious-looking meals. It should be beautiful. It's going to be limited to 20 diners, all sharing a long table in the tiny, tiny little cafe. And it's BYOB, with a quarter-century, £40. And it's aimed to be an event to meet new people, and in like a really relaxed atmosphere, and people with sort of similar interests and things like that as well.
Literature and food.
Exactly. There's reservation details that you can find on dailyinfo.co.uk.
Our Summer Shakespeare of the Week! This week is the English Repertory Theatre's 12th Night, which is at the Oxford Castle until the 5th of September. It opened about a week ago, and its press night is tonight.
I had a look at our listings. There are 5 outdoor Shakespeares on Daily Info at the moment.
At the moment, yes.
5.
I think later in the summer we'll do a recap. A top 10, yeah, we should do a roundup. This show is being performed at the Oxford Castle in the Castle Yard in the evenings, and then their matinees are in the exercise yard round the corner. So you could go twice to two different shows and get a different experience. They are doing this 12th night in a modern dress and setting it on the Cornish coast at a garden party, which turns into mayhem when there's a shipwreck and there's going to be drunkenness, and I think there's going to be wet play. So people on the front row are going to get soaked, I believe. 12th Night's a really very fun Shakespearean comedy, and they're definitely ramping up the humour in this one. It's going to be a very entertaining take on the show. The Oxford Castle's already hosted productions of The Canterbury Tales and A Midsummer Night's Dream this summer, so it's a really popular location for outdoor theatre. If you haven't been yet, then go see 12th Night to experience Oxford Castle as a lovely setting and to see a really great summer Shakespeare show.
Yeah, Henry V was there last year and it was brilliant. But for this one, make sure you bring a plastic poncho.
Yes, plastic ponchos at the ready. You can see 12th Night by the English Rep Theatre at the Oxford Castle, running until the 5th of September. Now we have Hinny joining us to tell us about the latest exhibition that's open at the Ashmolean, Discovering Tutankhamun.
I went along last week and it's brilliant. I can totally recommend it. It's really great. It's one of those things which isn't necessarily what you expect. You see the title, Discovering Tutankhamun, and you think it's going to be an Egyptology exhibition. But actually, that's something that's been done so many times. It's something that we've all visited on a school trip or something like that. But this is a very different take. The focus is very much in the 1920s, when the tomb was discovered by Howard Carter and his team. And it's got 3 separate galleries. And the first gallery focuses on the moment of discovery and then the work after that to preserve and keep studying what was in there and record meticulously. Howard Carter was a paragon of archaeological technique. He was really keen to preserve things and record them where they lay, and there was none of this kind of selling things on for the value of the gold and not shipping things out, and there were a lot of people who didn't keep any records when they found stuff. So this is something that a legacy that he's left, and it's actually his entire excavation notes are in the Griffith Institute in Oxford. It's really cool, and that's partly why this exhibition's come to the Ashmo, is because the Griffith Institute is celebrating its 75th anniversary, I think, and their entire archive is online to have a look at. It's a really brilliant institution in Oxford, so they've collaborated with the Ashmo to find all the bits that they've got in their archives and all the things that the Ashmolean's got in their collections that don't normally go on show. So the first gallery is the excavation, and the second gallery is all about the huge fashion for Tutankhamun and all things Tut that spread around, especially America and around Europe. So it inspired everything, like novels and music and fabric design. There's even a box of King Tut lemons.
It was just his favourite kind of fruit.
Exactly. It was such a random application of everything Egyptian into everyday life. And there's pictures of all the tourists who went to go and see the excavation. So you've got all the people working really hard, taking photographs and making sure it's all done properly. And then just slightly along the Valley of Kings, you've got this massive crowd of tourists and journalists and hangers-on and people who just wanted to see what was going on. Crazy. And all them, they've got a collection of fan letters to Howard Carter from mostly young children.
Oh.
Saying, I am six now, but maybe I will be an archaeologist. Brilliant, really nice. So that's the second gallery. And then the third gallery is back to Tutankhamun's world, and a little bit about the history surrounding his reign. It's really interesting. His father was a complete revolutionary. He changed a lot of things. And Tutankhamun himself, he was born into this world. His name originally reflected the fact that his father was encouraging everyone to worship one god rather than lots of gods. Huge changes, change of the religious capital in Egypt, all kinds of stuff. And he changed things back to the old way. But he was still kind of tainted, so his successors went to huge lengths to just wipe him from the history books. It's completely ironic that later on someone discovers his tomb and suddenly he's a worldwide phenomenon and a household name again, even though his successors tried to completely delete him. It's amazing. So altogether you get these three different takes of the discovery of the tomb, and it's a beautiful exhibition. They've put so much careful thought into it to explain things through what they're exhibiting rather than just show you stuff. I really enjoyed it, and I think it's definitely well worth a visit.
Sounds fascinating.
Yeah. So that's at the Ashmolean until November, I think, isn't it?
2nd of November. Thanks, Hilly.
Thank you very much.
Now, another festival for the summer, although this is a very different one. This is at the UPP on Thursday, tomorrow night. It's a found footage festival. Now, this is not the kind of like shaky cam Blair Witch Project kind of created, like it's found footage thing. This is a compilation of video clips collected from garage sales, thrift shops and bins across America.
It's like personal home videos mostly.
Yeah, exactly.
And you've like, been framed style.
Yeah, home videos and sort of promotional videos or really awkward training videos, things like that. It's in its 10th touring year and it's updated all the time, and it was put together by Nick Prewer and Joe Pickett, whose credits include The Onion and Late Show Dave Letterman, and they provide live commentary along with these clips in the cinema as it's going on, and sort of where are they now updates on all the people in the films as it's rolling.
So they follow up on people, they find people who they've got in the films.
Well, I don't know if they do or they don't. I think some of it might just be made up for amusement, but sounds pretty fun. Some of the updates for the 2014 tour include an exercise video montage with a Christmas-themed workout and a bizarre instructional video from 1997, rather redundantly titled How to Have Cybersex on the Internet. And it's sort of like Winnebago Man and Friends, I think, and it's coming to the end of its UK tour. After Oxford, all it's got left is two dates in Leicester Square, so it's one of the last chances to catch it. It's 9 o'clock at the UPP on Thursday.
Sounds very different. Also on Thursday, a theatre production from Three Street Productions, who are a young theatre company who specialise in new writing, and they're staging their latest show, The Fever, at the Arts at the Old Fire Station. It's Thursday to Saturday this week at 7:30. The Fever isn't a particularly new play itself, though. It was written nearly 25 years ago by American playwright and actor Wallace Shawn, and it's an experimental one-woman monologue originally created to be performed to small audiences in apartments in a sort of site-specific way. It's being performed in a theatre in this case, but that's kind of the thinking behind it. And it's essentially a 90-minute existential crisis about the difficulties of living a moral and consistent life faced against the injustice and paradoxes of the world. And in 2004, Vanessa Redgrave starred in the film adaptation of the play, which also had cameos from Jolie Richardson and Angelina Jolie.
Yeah.
Which is an amazing cast of women. If you want to have a good, hard, long think about your bourgeois privilege and the growing divide between the first and third world, then The Fever will definitely facilitate this. It's a frank and witty show. I don't think it's all doom and gloom. I'm making it sound pretty horrific, but we have to look in the mirror sometimes. And it's being put on by Three Streets Production at the OFS Thursday to Saturday at 7:30 this week.
Now, if you want to get handy and eco this weekend, there is a four-day workshop in Bicester, and it's to build a wind turbine, DIY wind turbine workshop, and it's to collectively build a 1.8 rotor diameter 300-watt wind turbine from hand using raw materials and hand tools. And the completed turbine will then be used at festivals and community and climate events in the area and also all over the country. You can sort of petition to get the turbine at your event.
Oh, lovely.
But you'll also, in the course of it, learn the skills to be able to go away and make your own wind turbine if you want to. So it's going to involve welding and woodwork and electronics and all sorts of things like that. And it costs £210 for the four-day course, which includes meals in Bicester. It's 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Thursday to Sunday.
And then you can just go create a whole wind turbine farm once you're done there.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort out the world's problems.
Put it in your back garden.
This summer, Oxford hosts its 16th Philharmonica Piano Festival, which began on Sunday and runs through to next Monday. The New York Times has described the festival as an international forum to turn piano lessons into performance art, which is great. The New York Times reporting on a festival in Oxford. I love it. The festival combines a celebration of piano with concerts in some of Oxford's most beautiful and historic venues, as well as lectures and masterclasses. There are gifted pianists taking part in the festival's Summer Academy, and they are the ones who learn and take part in the masterclasses, but then they're open to the public to buy tickets to watch. Mm-hmm. So you watch somebody else teach somebody else how to be an amazing pianist.
But they're all amazing, so
they're all amazing. And there are lots of recitals from the world-class pianists themselves. But then on Friday at 8, the Summer Academy participants perform their own concert at the Jacqueline Dupré Music Building. And they'll have just spent the week learning from the best pianist in the world. So it's going to be a really fantastic concert. And I'm sure the energy and the emotion and the passion in the room with pianists probably kind of watching them is going to be incredible. You can find out more about the Oxford Philharmonica Piano Festival on the Oxford Philharmonica website. And the festival runs until the end of the week.
Next up, we've got a bit of an interview. Hinnie met Ian Jackson from the Oxford Castle to talk about the Great Escapes tours.
Today, we're talking to Ian Jackson, who's one of the tour guides at Oxford Castle Unlocked, about a fantastic event that's running this summer at the castle. Yeah. What's happening?
So we're concentrating on the Great Escapes from the castle, ranging right back to about 800 years ago, looking at how various people have tried to escape from the castle confinements.
Wow. Were they successful?
Some of them were, yes. There's one in particular that's really well documented, and that was the granddaughter of William the Conqueror, Empress Matilda, in 1142. There's a legend in Oxford that she managed to climb down the side of the castle tower on bedsheets in the middle of winter. So she was wearing a white cloak, managed to escape, camouflaged against the snow.
Wow, that's a classic escape, isn't it?
Really it? Is.
The bed sheets and everything. Fantastic. And how does this tie in with the castle tours? Do you roam around with the visitors and tell them stories in different places?
Yeah, we do. So you go on a guided tour when you book onto the tours at the castle, and you hear lots of stories ranging from the Saxon times right up to modern day when the prison closed. And en route we look at the surviving parts of the building, talk about how they would have been used, and the escapes is mentioned slightly, but we're really emphasising that over the summer.
Grand. So yeah. Even if you've been on a tour at the castle before, you'll hear something new.
Definitely worth a new visit, actually. A lot of the stories that we tell aren't told originally on the guided tours, so it's something very new for the summer.
Fabulous.
I play Prisoner D100 from the Victorian era. During the summer, as well as a part of the Great Escapes, my characters manage to find a little escape route. So he makes it out into the prison yard, and then lots of sirens go off, and all of a sudden there's wardens chasing me down, and we encourage families and children to kind of either help the prisoner hide and escape out the prison, or more often than not they usually grass on me, and the warden catches me, and I'm locked away in the solitary confinement cell. So.
Wow, it sounds like a really exciting thing to get involved in.
It is. It's brilliant fun, really good.
What sort of ages of people is it suitable for?
It's suitable for everyone, really. 5 years old and above particularly enjoy it, because that gives you full access to every part of the castle site, and including the mound outside, which obviously in weather like this is beautiful. It's really good to have a picnic, and the best views of the city you can have are from the top of our tower. So, from 5 years old and above, really.
Brilliant stuff. And what else is happening at the castle this summer?
So there's an interactive video trails around the D wing of the prison. Again, families can come and look at those. That gives you a bit more information about the history of the site. And something that's really exciting is we've got our locked room, which is a bit of a jailbreak activity. So you can go with your friends, be locked away in one of the real prison cells in the D wing, and you have an hour to figure out how to escape. You have to follow lots of little clues and do a few physical challenges as well, but it's really intense but brilliant fun. You work together as a team and try and solve it. So think Crystal Maze meets Oxford Castle. It's a lot like that, really.
That sounds fantastic.
Really good fun. Really, really nice. Good fun.
Do you need to book?
You can book, we recommend it, it's getting quite busy, so yeah, you can book online, you can go to the Oxford Castle website, which is www.oxfordcastleunlocked.co.uk, and you can book from there.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Lovely, thank you.
That was Hinnie interviewing Ian Jackson from the Oxford Castle, and the Great Escape tours are ongoing until the 31st of August. For something more contemporary and experimental on Friday night, the New Libertines, a group of independent writers, are performing their show It Only Hurts the First Time in the Old Fire Station's cafe from 6:30pm. This is a show that features writers who are pushing the boundaries of literary form and content and very much intend to deliver a verbal slap in the face. Get ready. As part of the performance, there's going to be slam poet Davy Mack. There's a psychogeographic poet called Lucy Furlong.
What's a psychogeographic poet?
Go along and find out. And there's also an experimental novelist, Rowan Queen, and that's amongst several others doing very different, varied practices of which we probably don't understand the meaning, but is surely something very beautiful and visceral to hear. There's also going to be indie music from Superhand interspersed throughout the evening. You can read the New Libertines manifesto. They've got a manifesto kind of describing how they think writing and art and work needs to be, which is quite passionate, on their website, thenewlibertines.wordpress.com. It gives you a good sense of their aims of the group. And you can head over to the Crisis Skylight Cafe at the Old Fire Station from 6:30 on Friday to find out what a psychogeographic poet sounds like.
So the New Libertines are going to be in the cafe while the fever's on in the OFS?
Yes. It's a busy Friday night for the Old Fire Station.
Now, I've got a busier Friday night still, and Saturday too, at Cogs Farm. Cogs have got a beer and cider festival running all weekend. It's a fundraiser for the Cogs Heritage Trust, and they're based out in Whitney. They've got so much stuff planned. So they've got, along with the over 40 beers and ciders from local breweries, they've also got Aunt Sally, Lawn Croquet, Giant Chess, a bouncy castle, food stalls, and loads of music, including the original Rabbit Foot Spasm Band, Wes Finch, and the April Maze. And Saturday daytime is also the family day, so they're going to have storytelling and farm animals, and a bunch of World War One prints from the Imperial War Museum that are going to be on display as well. So tickets are £8 in advance or £10 on the door for adults, and the entry price includes a free Cogs tankard, a programme, and a half pint of beer or cider.
I think we should focus on the fact that there's Aunt Sally at this thing. We've talked about so many community festivals that don't have Aunt Sally. This one does.
It's true. We've also got a new feature on Daily Info about Aunt Sally, what it is, and the rules and everything, and you can read it on Daily Info.
Just search Aunt Sally on the website. More family fun this weekend at Blenheim Palace. The Knights of Arkley are going to come to the South Lawn for a momentous jousting battle this weekend. It's from Friday to Sunday at Blenheim. It's a biannual event. The last one happened in the early May bank holiday this year, and it runs from 11 to 3:45 each day. So as well as jousting with gallant knights and mighty steeds, there's also falconry displays, archery, and battles on foot too. A whole Good. Variety of kind of medieval entertainments. The jousting happens twice daily, so it's at 12 and at 3, and then in between there's also face painting and puppet shows for some of the younger attendees. And it's just a really magical day out. It's like going back in time at Blenheim Palace. Go along. You get to choose a colour, which side of the jousting team you want to win, and you can cheer them on. As usual with events at Blenheim Palace, it's a free event if you have an annual pass, and if not, then you can buy a park and gardens ticket, have a lovely day out at Blenheim, and see some jousting.
Also at Blenheim, if you buy one entrance to the parks and gardens, you can then swap your ticket for an annual pass, so you only have to pay once for the whole year.
So that next time you want to go to the jousting festival,
since it is biannual,
you can go along for free.
Do you have to dress up accordingly as well in medieval gear?
I don't think you have to, but if you can, you should.
Yes. Now, from the Middle Ages to the 1940s, I've got a film that's at the Phoenix on Sunday at 11. It's an Argentine thriller based on the true story of Josef Mengele, who was also known as the Angel of Death. Ooh. He was a gruesome experimental Nazi SS doctor in Auschwitz during the Second World War. He had a particular fascination with twins, pregnant women, and those with physical abnormalities on whom he would just do the most horrific experiments. After the war, he then fled and lived in exile under a false identity with a family in Argentina, and this is where the film picks up his story. So it's where he gets a new renewed interest in genetics and develops a relationship with the family's 15-year-old daughter. It also deals with the ongoing hunt for him by Mossad and the West German government. So a really cheery way to start your Sunday.
At 11 a.m.
11 a.m. It was screened at Cannes, and it was also Argentina's entry for Best Foreign Film at this year's Oscars. So it's a really, really great film. It's only one showing, and it is 11 o'clock on a Sunday, so set your alarm clocks.
On to Monday, and the Dead Rat Orchestra will be in Oxford. They are an innovative musical ensemble who perform sort of concerts and installations all over the world. This summer, they're undertaking a unique tour across the canals and waterways from London to Oxford and then on to Bristol.
And they have some very cool promotional beer mats.
They have some amazing little beer mats to tell you more about it. So to find out more, we won't say go to this website, we'll say go to your local pub and look at the table.
Yeah, they don't bother with flyers, it's amazing.
So on this 273-mile odyssey, the Dead Right Orchestra are going to be gathering history of the waterways and exploring their social and musical roots too, and then creative music that is kind of responsive to this. They're, of course, travelling and living on a very slow-moving barge as they develop this kind of site-specific composition. And as part of the Dead Right Orchestra is performer Nathaniel Mann, who was artist-in-residence at the Pitt Rivers and Oxford Contemporary Music for 18 months, which I think's ended. We've mentioned some of the gigs and installations he's done with them before on the podcast. And so the Dead Right Orchestra are going to be bringing their unique form of music to the Hollywell Music Room at 8 o'clock on Monday. And they'll be in Goring on Sunday and then Brazier's Park on Tuesday, just to give you an idea of the route and the timescale. They're going to spend all day travelling on this really slow boat. Look out for their amazing little beer mats. And if not, look online for more information if the beer, you can't find a beer mat.
Now back to North Oxford now for more cinema at the Phoenix. This is Monday at 6:45 and it is A Night at the Cinema 1914. This is to mark the centenary of the outbreak of World War I. The BFI, British Film Institute, have curated a typical evening from a 1914 picture palace with silent comedic shorts and travelogues and newsreels. It's really cool. So in 1914, it would have been accompanied by live music. So the BFI have set it to a similar kind of soundtrack. And Oxford actually has a really long history of cinema. So the Phoenix opened in 1913 as the North Oxford Cinema, and the UPP opened in 1911 as the Oxford Picture Palace, although it was sort of had a bit of hiatus in the middle for a couple of wars and things, so it wasn't continuously open.
Couple of wars and things, nothing major.
But I was also looking up other cinemas. There used to be one called the Electric Theatre, which sort of got flattened by the Westgate when that came along, and also the Old Music Hall on Cowley Road. And they used to show films from 1900, I think. A man came along with a screening of Queen Victoria's Diamond Jubilee and started screening it in the Old Music Hall.
Gosh.
So there you go. I think this one you should definitely try and dress up for as well.
This is why we call Aura the filmy.
Yeah, I know my Oxford cinema. Yeah, so it's on Monday at 6:45 at the Phoenix.
A Night at the Cinema in 1914.
Mm-hmm. Also, related to 1914, just a little kudos to the people of Charlbury. So basically, in Charlbury by the train station, they planted a whole load of poppies to commemorate all the people of Charlbury who went to the First World War and died there. And they've also got these signs up from each of the battlefields where the people died. They started having a bit of a rabbit problem. The rabbits quite liked the poppies, and so the residents of Charlbury started putting out carrots and cabbages, sort of kind of close, but a little bit further away from the poppies, so the rabbits would go there instead. And during the hot weather, the residents of Charlbury have been watering the poppies morning and evening.
Well done, guys. That was Orla, our World War I cinema and Charlbury expert. If you want to hear more Orla facts, then tune into the Oxcast next week.
And to hear Anaïs talking about next week's Oxford Shakespeare of the Week, then come back next week as well.
In the meantime, you can find us on social media at Daily Info Oxford, or by liking our Facebook page, you'll get updates. Just search for Daily Info Oxford.